Welcome to the Accenture MIT podcast series. Here's Daniel Jackson, professor of computer science at MIT.
In the last few podcasts of this series, I've explained why, according to many researchers and thinkers, our online habits are in many ways damaging our ability to think deeply and creatively, and are making us less effective and more anxious. Of course, there are skeptics who say these concerns are overblown, but I have yet to meet anyone who doesn't feel burdened by email, distracted when they're at work, and less relaxed the more they use computers. Some people say that technology is neutral, and that it all depends on how you use it. But that seems naive to me. Computers are admittedly more neutral than atomic bombs in terms of how they shape their users. But to say that a computer doesn't encourage some kinds of behavior and discourage others strikes me as silly. This was partly Marshall McLuhan's point in his famous slogan that the medium is the message. How an idea is expressed cannot be separated from the idea itself. I'm not a Luddite, though, and I think technology is great. I can't imagine working as a researcher without the web, Google, online databases, or living without email or online newspapers, and my favorite activity outside work, photography, is made immeasurably more satisfying by all the technological advances of the last decade. The reason I chose this subject for my podcast series, though, is that I do think we have a very real problem, and that the first step in treating the problem is to recognize it fully. As people working in computer technology, we're in a particularly vulnerable position because our work keeps us tied to computers for much of the day. But we're also in a privileged position, since we have a better understanding of the good and bad effects of computers than the general public, and perhaps a better chance of getting the benefits without suffering from all the disadvantages. And of course, as technologists, it's our job to help other people use computers. And that means not only helping them in the narrow sense of building systems and teaching them how to use them, but in the larger sense too of helping them understand how to integrate computerized applications into their lives in a way that is enriching and not damaging. After the New York Times ran the Your Brain on Computers series last summer that I mentioned in my first podcast, it held an online forum entitled Digital Detox and asked a bunch of experts for their ideas on how to overcome some of these challenges. One idea came up again and again: to set aside regular times for being offline, away from any digital devices. One person suggested small offline breaks once an hour. One person said his family went offline for the whole weekend. Another recommended what he called technology vacations, in which you go away for a whole week, say, without going online at all. In my own home, since we observe Shabbat, the Jewish Sabbath, we go offline from sundown on Friday until nightfall on Saturday. It's a wonderful break, and I can't imagine living without it. Time off isn't enough, though. We need to find ways to avoid being sucked in by the lure of the computer. One of the readers of the New York Times blog described going online as like getting a cocaine fix. People get a momentary high from the social backpatting of reading an email message or receiving feedback on a Facebook update. If so, the problem is like an addiction, and overcoming it will require a lot of effort. I think that's true, but it also means that the rewards are potentially enormous if you can free yourself. Here are some of the ideas that I've had and that I try and put into practice myself. I can't claim that I'm completely successful, but I can tell you that when I actually put these ideas into practice, I notice an immediate improvement in my quality of life. And I like to think in the quality of my thinking, too. First, I find it helpful to have times and places in which I don't go online. The last hour of the evening seems to be especially important. If I'm reading and answering emails just before I go to bed, it's harder to get to sleep, and it leaves a feeling that the day was one long rush. On the days that I spend that last hour listening to music, reading a book, or hanging out with friends and family, I feel that the day has come to a close in a calmer and more productive way. I once asked Barbara Liskov, a colleague of mine who won the Turing Award last year for her pioneering work on programming languages and distributed systems, what the secret of her success was. Her answer was that she never worked at night. She felt that by leaving her work behind, She not only started the next day more refreshed, but also had time to mull over her ideas and found solutions to hard problems springing to mind when she wasn't working. Idea number two. I try not to do urgent but unimportant things at the time of day when my thinking is clearest. For me, mornings and evenings are the time that I'm most able to think reflectively. And just after lunch, when I'm feeling a bit drowsy and lazy, is the time when I'm least likely to have any good ideas. So I try and deal with administrative emails at lunchtime and not waste my best thinking time doing routine tasks. Idea number three, try to batch up small tasks. I get about 100 emails a day, of which about 20 to 50 need an answer. If I leave my email client open all day and answer emails as they come in, that might mean that I'm sending an email message every 10 minutes. That's a terrible distraction. Instead, I try to let them accumulate and then deal with a big pile all in one go. This has many advantages. Some emails naturally decay. They seem to need your instant attention, but then someone else jumps in and answers them or circumstances change. Also, when you do email in one big session, you're not paying that cost of the constant context switches. Idea number four. I try to separate entertainment from work. If I'm itching to read an article in an online newspaper or to look at a photography exhibit online, rather than switching back and forth between that and my work, I try to assign a time during the day when I can relax properly, to get a cup of coffee, sit down and read that article or browse those photos for 15 minutes. Then I can go back to my work refreshed and not feeling constantly distracted. Idea number five, try to never wait actively. There are some computer tasks that involve repeatedly waiting for downloads to complete, for DVDs to burn, compilations to terminate, and so on. There are few things that are a bigger waste of time than sitting glued to a progress bar. So I try to arrange these activities so that I'm doing something else at the same time. And every so often I'll take a peep and see if the task has completed. Admittedly, this is a form of multitasking with all its attendant risks, but I find that the reduced stress from not actively waiting more than compensates for the cost of context switching. And for things that look like they're going to take a really long time, such as doing a file synchronization on a large repository, I try to walk away from the computer completely and let it do its work while I'm doing something more enjoyable. So there are a few ideas of mine. I'm sure that many of you have ideas of your own. I'll be posting a blog article on my Accenture blog site about this, so I hope you'll contribute your suggestions and reactions to these podcasts as comments on the blog posting. If I get a few good suggestions, I'll collect them together and post the summary. I look forward to hearing from you. Bye-bye.
Copyright 2010, Daniel Jackson. Music copyright 2010, Chris Bremer from pianosociety.com.